This is Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Brothers and sisters, Maya, who has pinched her sciatica nerve, is in pain and won't be joining us today. She'll be with us next week. Today we're going to have a special program for you, a critical program of importance concerning the fate of the heroic Lynn Stewart, who is currently in prison, her bail having been revoked. And we're going to be discussing the implications of this, the political ramifications, with her lifetime companion and political comrade, Ralph Poynter. Ralph, a leader of the struggle in Harlem over many years and the rights of teachers, and a longtime political revolutionist and activist and companion of Lynn Stewart. Ralph, welcome to Taking Aim. So good to be with you.
Thank you, Ralph. And I was going to begin by asking, how is Maya? But you have said it. And it is my honor and pleasure to be on your program that I have admired for so long. And I hope I get it as right as you do.
Thanks so much, Ralph. The first thing I'd like to do, Ralph, is to emphasize that we want to see a letter-writing campaign, and we want to see thousands of letters reaching Lynn every day. She will respond to them, and we want the authorities to be aware that Lynn is the emblem of a movement of justice, a movement for resistance to the oppressive state, the conditions of permanent war, and indeed the representation of the oppressed, which has characterized her entire life. Brothers and sisters, take this down. Lynn Stewart, 53504-054, MCC/New York, 150 Park Row, New York, New York, 10007. Once again, Lynn Stewart, 53504-054, MCC/New York, 150 Park Row, New York, New York, 10007. We want a letter campaign, brothers and sisters. Everybody should commit to contacting five people, and each of those should be asked to contact another five. And the commitment is to write to Lynn a letter, a card, a note. We want everybody writing to Lynn. In five stages, we reach 3,000, brothers and sisters, on the chain letter principle. So let's get it together. And if you go to the website of Taking Aim, we'll have, again, the contact information concerning Lynn and a constant update on her case. Ralph?
Ralph, we may not have a good connection here. It is MCC 150 Park Row, New York, New York, 10007. Lynn Stewart, and the numbers, I think, came through clearly.
Okay, very good, Ralph. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Now, Ralph, let's go to where we are right now, the current situation. Lynn is being held, and she's scheduled for surgery on December 7th at Lenox Hill Hospital. Well, I want to emphasize here that Lynn is 70 years of age, has high blood pressure, hypertension, diabetes, has survived breast cancer, and is scheduled for surgery. There is a particular vindictiveness to the government's behavior here. The appellate court, the Second Circuit Court, has instructed the judge, Judge Kotel, to revoke her bail. That is to say, while her case has been pending appeal, and while the arguments are still being made concerning the original conviction and indeed the entitlement of the attorneys to consider an appeal to the Supreme Court, this Second Circuit Court has demanded the revocation of her bail, and she has been remanded to prison, even though the legal arguments are still being heard that pertain to her case.
Let me be a little more specific on that. While the case was on appeal with the Second Circuit, Lynn was getting herself prepared for the worst, and she had scheduled an operation at Lenox Hill Hospital, one of the premier hospitals in New York, so that she wouldn't be a victim, not only of the prison system, but a victim of the prison medical system. We all know the decision came down from the Second Circuit, and we lost everything. And as a result, not only did they remand her instantly, which would be 2 weeks short of her date for her surgery at Lenox Hill Hospital, they are going to argue and continue to discuss whether she is to be extended from 28-month prison sentence to an 80-month prison sentence. So that is still hanging over our head. And presently, Her attorneys, headed by Liz Fink, will be in the court Tuesday of next week to argue that Lynn should be allowed to go to Lenox Hill Hospital and have this surgery before surrendering, because they have not designated a prison for her to surrender to. Now, you are correct in saying we are not finished with the courts, even though our struggle is based on the premises that the courts have always been unjust. And we will use every weapon that's possibly available, and that includes continuing with the court struggle, carrying it to the Supreme Court. So our immediate concern is that Lynn Stewart be given time to go to have an operation in a hospital that has a reputation of excellence. Early on, when Lynn was first convicted, they were talking about preparing Danbury for her incarceration. That's a local prison in Connecticut here, close to New York City. And I laughingly said, what are they going to do, tear out the telephones? Because Lynn's supposed crime has only been speech. First Amendment.
Right.
They denied First Amendment to her, and that's why she will soon be reporting to a prison. But it is not like the 70-year-old grandmother is going to jump out of the ambulance and run. She has always stated clearly that she's staying to fight this case. She's staying to bring the issues to all of those willing to listen. So all of those concerned about the Constitution that has been ripped away from us. So
yes,
it is vindictiveness. But as I say over and over again, we had hoped for better. But the reason why all of us are involved in this movement is because we have seen the vindictiveness of this system. And we know when a system begins to fail, it gets more vindictive.
Now, Ralph, you know, in particular here, the authorities are attempting to impose upon Lynn a surgery at the hospital downtown, which is, it's a prison ward at a hospital with hardly a reputation for proper surgery and proper hygienic conditions. In fact, my understanding is that Ramsey Clark, who was co-counsel with Lynn, had pointed out that nurses even refused to work at that hospital because of the appalling conditions. And for the courts to attempt to impose upon her a surgery at a place like that is in itself an indication of their malicious intent, their vindictiveness in this circumstance. To take somebody, not merely the question of holiday season, not merely the issue that to revoke her bail while legal issues are pending is a specific vindictive act. As you indicate, the idea that Lynn Stewart will flee their custody is absurd on its face. Lynn has been battling politically and has been mobilizing, as that's our task, brothers and sisters, to mobilize the many around the fundamental issues at which are at stake here. Because, as Lynn says, this is a struggle, this is a fight for all, not just all lawyers in the United States, but for a defense of basic democratic rights in this society. Because what is involved here, brothers and sisters, is the attempt to threaten attorneys in the United States with being charged with the very crime of the defendant who they are enlisted to defend. That means that all of the struggles for basic due process and constitutional rights and protections for the rights of accused by the state to have the opportunity to confront their accusers, to have the right to complete confidential defense with their attorneys, rights for which Magna Carta itself was instituted, struggles that go back nearly 1,000 years, are on the block here. Basically, what this is about, brothers and sisters, is this fake war on terrorism being deployed to criminalize advocacy. It's a threat to the very basis of any due process or constitutional protections in the United States. It circumvents the Bill of Rights. It rewrites the Constitution. It means that a lawyer cannot defend his or her client without risking being charged with the same crime that their client is charged with merely because they are using all of their appropriate skills to defend the rights of that client, to advocate for that client, to facilitate an understanding publicly of the conditions and rights of their client they defend. The government uses the media and the press in a constant propaganda effort to incite prejudice against those they attack. This is the standard procedure of state authority. And the right of lawyers to act in the defense of their clients, to mobilize opinion, to attempt to seek through the press an understanding of the issues at stake is basic. And what we have to keep in mind is that on the same day that Bush signed the Patriot Act into law, the psalm-singing Attorney General Ashcroft announced an amendment to the Bureau of Prisons regulations that authorized the government to conduct electronic surveillance on attorney-client conversations of persons in custody. 2 years before that, they'd issued a special warrant from a secret foreign intelligence court located within the Justice Department. And what's involved here is that Lynn Stewart, attorney appointed by a federal court to represent the blind Egyptian cleric Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman, became the first attorney in the United States subjected to the surveillance of privileged prison interviews. This is not an aberration. Now this rule applies to all counsel in what are so-called national security cases. What this represents is a new power superimposed on regulations which already were installed by that administration to allow the Bureau of Prisons authority to impose what were called special administrative measures, or SAMs, that require attorneys to limit their advocacy, to surrender their own First Amendment rights, and to submit themselves to actions approved only by the Justice Department with respect to prisoners or risk prosecution. If they don't sign on for these so-called SAMs, or special administrative measures, they are deprived of the right to be in contact with their client. The Justice Department is fully cognizant of the meaning of this, and what is the simple thrust of these regulations and impositions and decrees is to eliminate the entitlement of a lawyer to have a privileged, confidential contact with their client without the government, the very prosecution, the state, spying on them and noting everything they say.
Well, Ralph, I'm going to try to be your Maya today for a moment.
Yeah, please, Ralph.
Cut into the so much that you've said, and I would like to point out a few interesting facts. When they were listening in on Lynn Stewart's conversations with her client, Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman, they found nothing illegal. Nothing was said that was illegal. And I think that should be pointed out to people. What they accused her of was being suspicious that she was being listened into and trying to stop them from listening in, trying to stop the guards from getting too close to listen in on privileged conversation. Let me say that again. She was condemned for trying to stop the government and guards and people who should never have been privy of the conversations, because no one had told her that they were listening in. But she was suspicious that they were listening in and tried to cover up. This is her crime, and this is what one of the things that she is in jail for now. Never heard anything illegal, because nothing illegal was said. It was accused of doing her job too well. And the other point I'd like to make is on the day before she was incarcerated, one of the local newspapers had in it, there's a headline, "This will be a sad day for those coming from Guantanamo to be tried in New York because there will not be a Lynn Stewart around to defend them." Well, let me tell you, my brothers and sisters, as Ralph would say, there will not be Lynn Stewarts around to defend you when you have a problem, because they use these same things, these same draconian invasions of law and the rollback of the Constitution on you as well as the people coming from Guantanamo. And understand It's not protecting the rights of the people in Guantanamo. It's making them protect a system that is supposed to do a particular job of justice. And we of the non-white community and the poor community in America know that system never did work. But there is those who attempted to make it work are under the gun. And if anybody is questioning whether the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act doesn't apply to them, all they have to do is go back and find out about all of the records of people, the mass surveillance of American people. So, yes, it is here. The police state is here, and we're going to have to enlist more people to fight it. And as Ralph said, begin. Let the government know that you understand this by writing to Lynn Stewart. And I'm happy to say that I've heard from organizations, legal organizations in this country, the Lawyers Guild, organizations outside of the country, in Canada, in Germany, South Korea, people are saying, what is going on? And is becoming clearer and clearer. The attack of this government on people who want to preserve the earth, people who want a job, people who want to see justice for all, people who want to see a government that is inclusive, not exclusive, people who want to see immigrants with rights, people who want to see health, are going to be prosecuted and persecuted more and more. And they're just saying, you know, if you do it, we're coming after you. And I hope that there will be more and more Lynn Stewarts. And I'm happy to see that there are students who are saying no. I'm happy to see that more people working on health care are saying no. We're not going to allow you to do this to us. And I'm looking to a positive conclusion of this, even though it is very dark now, and I am concerned mightily for Lynn Stewart, who has shown bravery and has said so many people have been punished so much throughout the history of America for trying to make this country be what it said it was. So she accepts the reality of the struggle. Because that's why she's in the struggle. She knows what this government is capable of.
And Ralph, with respect to what Lynn is leading the struggle to oppose, we have to be very clear. This is a breach of the fundamental rights of defendants. It's a breach of the Bill of Rights. It's a breach of the First Amendment. It's a breach of constitutional protections. It's a breach of due process. It means that the attorney-client confidentiality privilege is abrogated. It means the government spies on lawyers as they prepare a defense against fake and trumped up government charges. It means they can impose regulations like the SAMs that deny the right of attorneys to communicate on behalf of their clients, to transmit to the world outside what the issues are, to allow them to be in contact with their families, with those who are supporting their efforts, to allow an attorney to say to the press, to issue a press release defining what the issues are. Where are the individual civil rights, the First Amendment rights of attorneys in such a circumstance?
Well, let's not be too surprised at that, because if I'm not mistaken, I remember reading or listening on your program for the young man who, not Yacho young man, who the gentleman who had transcribed the discussions between Blair and Bush as to how they were going to fake this whole thing of mass destructions and then bring on a war against Iraq, when he reported that they put him in jail for giving up state secrets. Could have been a state secret, but it was the truth.
Yes, well, the issues are clear, yep. Because you have essentially a 1% of the population owning 95%, more than 95% of the wealth in the United States, more than 95% of the combined wealth of the rest of the population taken together. It's a tiny little oligarchy. It's a ruling class. As the author of Up the Organization, the former president of Avis and American Express put it, He calculated that 5,000 people control what are called the commanding heights of the United States economy. That is the ruling class that wages permanent war. That is the ruling class that is engaged in handing over to the banksters $24 trillion while pauperizing the rest of the population. Repression is their only answer with respect to the economy and political system that they command. And in regard to that, Ralph, you referenced the Guantanamo prisoners who have been tortured, Guantanamo prisoners who are the most clear expression of the abrogation of basic democratic rights in this society. No right of defense, no right to public trial, no right to civilian trials, held incommunicado under military control at a base imposed in a colonial matter on the sovereign nation of Cuba. And here are these people who are held in secret, who are without any proper defense except for a military-appointed attorney, are to be brought to the United States. And that is the timing, the dog and pony show that Barack Obama and his Attorney General Eric Holder have brought to bear. By the way, I think, Ralph, it's important to point out that Eric Holder, prior to his being made Attorney General by Barack Obama, during the Bush administration, was the very figure who was representing the major companies, pineapple and sugar companies, that are exploiting the Colombian population and the death squads that they operate. Holder was complicit with the operation of those death squads. Holder was complicit with the program of bombing the peasants of Colombia. Holder has blood on his hands. He is a figure who has been associated with the most repressive policies in Colombia. And of course, these very policies are being implemented in the United States. And Holder has to be held accountable for this vindictive campaign to railroad Lynn Stewart into jail because she is defending those falsely accused. Yes, please, Ralph.
Closer to home, Ralph. This torture issue. It has been long known that black Americans, non-white Americans, have been tortured, and torture to this date is still being used in cases of against the Black Panther Party. We just saw the San Francisco 8, where the court said evidence brought by torture as a result of torture is okay. And now let's talk about Chicago, the home of Obama and the Daily Machine. It is well documented that torture by the Chicago Police Department upon black people in that area has been systematic, well known. I don't know what happened to that. Cases were brought. A few people were fired. But we still see the torture has always been a part of the American judicial system. I never forget when Sekou Adinga said, if they're calling us criminals, why do they treat us different than criminals, political people who are arrested? They don't pull out the fingernails of criminals. They didn't waterboard criminals, but they called political people who fought against this system criminals and then treated them like political people, like dictators treat political people. So we see that this issue of torture is not about them. They use it as a guise, a cover. We are going to, it's okay to torture these people, which I believe torture is not okay for anyone.
Well, that's central to the ruling class's operation today. I want to emphasize a few things pertaining to the client of Lynn Stewart and of Ramsey Clark, Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman. Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman, the blind Egyptian cleric with a mosque in Brooklyn and a mosque in New Jersey, was subject to the intervention of the Federal Bureau of Investigation of New York for 3.5 years. For 3.5 years, a high-level Egyptian intelligence operative and a an operative of the Federal Bureau of Investigation in New York, was sent into the mosque of Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman, where he was attempting to recruit young men to come to meetings. And at these meetings, he would set up at particular safe houses. He would discuss all kinds of random things. All the while, this operative, whose name was Imad Ali Salem, was providing explosives and arranging for a rider rental van. And the facets of that which have to be emphasized are the following. The rider rental office, which rented a van to a young named Mohammed Solomon, was manned by FBI operatives. The entire rider rental office was a front for the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The telephone number in the apartment that was rented for the meetings with young men by Imad Ali Salem was rented by Guzi Hadass, who actually moved into that apartment. Guzi Hadass is a Mossad intelligence operative identified as such. The International Herald Tribune reported it. In fact, the International Herald Tribune actually contacted an FBI officer named Valaket to ask for FBI confirmation that Guzi Hadass was in fact working for the Mossad. And the response was, even if it is true, we are not allowed to confirm it.
Well, listen, Ralph, I will say this to you. In 10 years, if we are successful in making public and to making people understand the reality or the perfidy of the American government, we could take this case and turn it into a comedy, except for the people who were killed and injured by the FBI by having the bomb blow up that Imad Salem didn't believe could blow up. The operative who, excuse me, I have jumped ahead.
It's okay, Ralph. This is what you're saying is of critical importance here.
And the Landmarks case.
Right.
Because Imad Salem, this whole thing of the Landmarks case could be a comedy, as well as World Trade Center 1 could be a comedy, if the truth be told so as to be understood, the way that people were set up and the type of people who were set up to be the fall guys in this. As I say, except for the people injured, this would be laughable. And many of the things that happened in the trial, it was serious that the Sheikh's life was at stake. Other than that, you couldn't write a comedy that is funnier than this. But the American people were buffaloed, were bulldog, were scared into following the government's orders. Do what we say so that we can protect you. And I say to the American people, who's going to protect you from the government? And I think that this last economic debacle, the way it happened, the flaws in the capitalist system itself are becoming more self-evident, where there are more people who are going to begin to look at the society that we live in. I know now people are beginning to question what happened to me. People are beginning to be bitter about unemployment. People are beginning to be bitter about lack of health care. Well, I think that is step one in people beginning to say, hey, what's going on?
Well, I think so too, Ralph. And I think it's important to clarify for our listeners that it's not just that the Egyptian cleric Omar Abdulrahman was accused falsely of plotting to blow up the World Trade Center in 1993. But as you mentioned, the Landmarks case, the case in which he was accused of planning to blow up the George Washington Bridge, the Brooklyn Bridge, the Holland Tunnel, the Lincoln Tunnel, the United Nations, the Statue of Liberty, to assassinate Alphonse D'Amato, then senator, to assassinate Secretary General Boutros-Ghali of the United Nations. Every single one of these landmarks targets was prepared by who? By Imad Ali Salem and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The authorities had not merely had advanced plans, but were the authors of the plans to bomb the UN, the New York headquarters of the FBI, the Lincoln Holland tunnels, the assassinations that I've mentioned. This is a government operation. This is not a matter of speculation, brothers and sisters.
Ralph, I have to interrupt you. And I says, when the people become aware this will be a comedy. But I would like to point out one of the pieces of evidence that was used against the so-called bombers in the Landmarks bombing case is Emad Salem has a camera as he's riding down the FDR Drive. And he's talking about, shall we blow up the UN? He's got the camera, and the young man who's supposed to be in on his plot says, are we on television?
Right.
Evidence that was produced before the jury. Are we on television? And this is supposed to be somebody who's going to blow up something. There are other stories. A young man who was supposed to supply guns found a dirty, rusty rifle, and they paid him for it. And he said, I can get 20 more. He couldn't even get one rifle. But he's doing life as a conspirator to blow up Landmarks.
This is Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Let me mention something, because these FBI operations, Ralph, with respect to the Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman, were preceded with the assassination of the right-wing Zionist Kahani, Rabbi Kahani. Now, what's interesting about that is the figure who was accused of assassinating Kahani was in fact working with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and Emad Ali Salem was in close contact with him throughout. It's interesting to note that Kahani, who called for the expulsion of all the Palestinian people, had taken a small boat up to Maine outside of the vacation home of George Bush Sr., where he was with James Baker, and Kahani taunted them with a banner that they were colluding with the Palestinians and not sanctioning their expulsion by the Israeli state. And Bush and Baker, who didn't like their cover blown, stated that you're not going to hear from Mr. Kahani anymore. The assassination unfolded not long after that, brothers and sisters. And what's interesting about that is that the very people who worked at the Ryder Rental Office, the FBI operatives, date back to this involvement with the assassination of Kahani. And that includes Emad Ali Salem. As the Dallas Muslim Monitor, the Muslim World Monitor, published on July 4th, Emad Ali Salem, the Egyptian intelligence officer who had entered the milieu of Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman at the direction of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, was involved in the trial of El Sayed Nusser, accused in the assassination of Rabbi Meir Kahani. And Salem was wired throughout his association. The high-ranking Egyptian intelligence officer working for the Federal Investigation taped all conversations and indeed worked with informants for the Federal Bureau of Investigation. They knew every residence, office, and meeting which occurred between members of the mosque of the Sheikh. As the Muslim Monitor published, Salem had them under surveillance long before the February 26 blast took place. He, and I'm quoting, was the source of the plans to blow up the Lincoln and Holland tunnels, the United Nations and other targets, and the assassinations. The clients were entrapped. They were unaware of any of the schemes that were being proposed by Salem himself and by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. He was wired before and after and during every meeting. He was involved in the provision of the safe house. He was involved in storing the bombs. He purchased the firearms.
Rented the safe house. He was not involved. He brought the fertilizer. This was FBI. These guys were just people who were brought in around to fill in what he had already done. He rented the safe house. He brought the fertilizer. These guys couldn't have mixed a milkshake. It's a tragedy that he went around to the mosque and picked those hangers-on, jobless people who were, I don't know what name you would call them, and included them in for a meal. He always had money. He was a type of person like that. And there were those who were in the mosque and said to themselves, who is this guy who's always talking the most militant stuff, who always has money, who's always beside the sheikh? So they just stopped hanging out. And they says, listen, I'm getting away from this guy.
Well, actually, Ralph, that's the heart of the matter, and that is the crime of Lynn Stewart. That is the crime of Ramsey Clark. They were defending the sheikh who was set up. They were in the process of exposing who bombed the World Trade Center. And I want to point out something, brothers and sisters. 1,200 people were wounded in that bombing. 6 people were killed in that bombing. And it was later established that those bombs were located just a few feet shy of their intended location, which was at the support struts for the building, which would have caused the collapse of the building, not in the in the free fall as with the 2001 controlled demolition organized by the U.S. intelligence services. This would have been a collapse in which the building would have toppled over. They estimated 10,000 deaths would have been the outcome of the intended explosives and their location in the time of this plot by the Federal Bureau of Investigation in 1993 under, by the way, President Bill Clinton, let it be emphasized. Ralph, to the point that you were mentioning about the safe house in the apartment, Imad al-Salem arranged it, but the telephone number and the lease for the apartment were in the name of Guzi Hadass. In fact, Guzi Hadass was also the person who rented the Ryder rental van for the fall guy Salami, who didn't even know the purpose of the rental of the van. This has the hands of the Mossad. It has the hands of the federal FBI on this catastrophic conspiracy of the United States authorities, of the Mossad and the FBI, from the beginning to the end. The crime of Lynn Stewart is to be the representative of the falsely accused, to be in the position to expose who bombed the World Trade Center in 1993.
Yes, your programs are so filled with information. I just hope people buy your CDs and get them and make their contributions to the radio programs that you are on, to make sure they're on the air, because I have heard this so many times, it's almost too much to put your mind around, unless you say, well, remember the Maine. This has happened before.
Right.
Remember Pearl Harbor. This has happened before. People were aware of and said, well, let's not make this public. Let's turn it into things that can be used for the imperialist design that America has always been. Let us not forget the general. We're coming upon Thanksgiving, that so-called holiday, and I, as some a young person, and I had mistakenly said Thanksgiving out in Oakland, California, and a young man interrupted me and says, don't you mean Genocide Day?
Yes, absolutely. And Ralph, you know, as you're, thank you for those comments, but I mean, as we look at this more closely, and I must say, you know, I wrote a piece, Ralph, in 1993, who bombed the U.S. World Trade Center, growing evidence points to role of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. That was published in Prevailing Wind in 1993, and, I mean, just a quote from this article in particular. Imad al-Salem was working with El Said Nosseir before the assassination of Meir Kahane, assisted him in finding lodges, provided other services on behalf of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. After the assassination of Kahane, Chief of Detectives Joseph Borelli, quote, shrugged off the political implications of the involvement of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. In the police raid of Nosseir's rented house in Cliffside, New Jersey, they discovered there manuals for building bombs, photos of the World Trade Center, the Empire State Building, the Washington Monument, and text advocating terrorist strikes on American soil, unquote. All of those provided by Imad al-Salem on behalf of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. A senior investigator called this collection of documents the roadmap to the World Trade Center bombing. This and the attendant documents concerning bombings and assassinations, plots for the so-called landmark case, sat in the FBI offices in 50 storage boxes for 6 months prior to the bombing in 1993. By late summer 1992, quote, federal investigators had reports of plans to assassinate the Secretary General of the United Nations, Boutros Boutros-Ghali. They were provided by Ahmad Ali Salem, who had been the author of these reports, and this article goes on, kept pictures of torture victims among his family albums. We are dealing with the most degenerate figures who are deployed by the Federal Bureau of Investigation on their behalf to terrorize the American people. They are the authors of these plots. And with respect to Ralph, the timing of this this ruling by the Second Circuit, because what is it? Almost, it's over 2 years after the Lynn was convicted, while this appeal was being considered by the Second Circuit. Yet they made this outrageous ruling at the very moment that Obama is announcing that they're going to bring to New York the Guantanamo tortured in a show trial. And in regard to this show trial about concerning terrorism, establishing the fear of the terrorists, the war on terror being escalated now in precise conjunction with the plans to escalate the number of troops in Afghanistan to 200,000. You say 200,000, they're talking 40,000, there are 70,000 soldiers, brothers and sisters. They want to increase it by 40,000. There are over 100,000 mercenaries, that is to say, Blackwater-style mercenaries engaged in the same repressive operations in conjunction with the Department of Defense in Afghanistan as we speak. 200,000 will be sent to Afghanistan in total. That is the reason for this timing of the ruling by the Second Circuit. That is the reason for this dog and pony show of a show trial in New York for the Guantanamo victims. Who is the principal figure, Ralph, that has been cited as the point man? Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed has confessed to what? He's confessed to the plot to blow up the World Trade Center in 1993. He's confessed to the plot to bomb landmarks in New York. Well, why haven't they released Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman? We now have the culprit, according to the United States authorities, is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
Say to you, Ralph, if you were tortured, I think he was waterboarded either 69 or 89 times, I think you would confess to being the devil, doing everything in the history of the world, and I think they've driven this man, whoever he is, insane. And if people have a problem wrapping their mind around the perfidy of the government, I say to them, here is a litmus test. The lawyers who are appointed to defend these Guantanamo defendants, you wait to hear them say to the government and publicly, did this information come from torture? How many times were they tortured? Are we allowed to have attorney-client privileges without the government listening in? And when you hear that stated, then you will know that, Ralph and the Ralphs are wrong. The government tells us the truth. But I submit to you, you will never hear that stated because they will be told, if you talk like that, we'll give you the Lynn Stewart treatment.
That's exactly that's exactly what we have here, brothers and sisters. Lynn Stewart is the emblem of the defense of our elementary democratic rights. How is it possible, I ask you, brothers and sisters, that people who have been tortured are not immediately released from incarceration and those responsible for the torture indicted? When was it that a case could be brought into a court of law based upon the torture by the authorities of those accused without the immediate demand by the court to release these people on constitutional grounds? Their rights were violated, their First Amendment rights, their Fourth Amendment rights, their Sixth Amendment rights. People are automatically entitled to be released from custody if they are subjected to torture by the authorities. That's the meaning of the Bill of Rights. When did a defense attorney attorney ever hesitate to immediately demand the release of their clients? And when has a judge ever failed to release people who were tortured by the authorities? And what have we got today? The institutionalization of torture, the institutionalization of rendition, the institutionalization of secret trials. I repeat, Ralph, if Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, according to the United States government, according to Barack Obama, according to Eric Holder, if Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is the man responsible for blowing up the World Trade Center in 1993, I don't even want to speak about 9/11. If he's responsible for the landmark plots to assassinate the head of the United Nations and Senator D'Amato, and to blow up all of these, what we've cited, the Lincoln Tunnel, the Holland Tunnel, the United Nations, the Statue of Liberty, why then Omar Abdulrahman must be released immediately?
Well, I must remind you, Ralph, when you asked the question, when has torture been accepted in the American courts, I answer, well documented, and we don't have to go way back to 1870, we don't have to go back to the states' rights cases, all we have to do is look over to Chicago, the home of Obama and Holder. Their political base is when it was so well documented and brought to the public's attention, which the public has not been interested in dealing with. Torture has long since been a part of the American judicial system, and what they have done this time is made the American people accept that. They no longer have to hide and dodge and delay and pay, what is it, pay restitution for people who were tortured. Now they bring it down front. Under this so-called terrorism situation, no different than the communist scare, all of the other scares they've had in American history, and it's going to come home to bite us all.
Well, let me say this, Ralph. You have made the point that I failed to make. When I speak rhetorically about the courts throwing out cases involving torture, rarely and only occasionally, that's the nominal practice. But as you say, every police department has tortured blacks, political activists, radicals, Native Americans for the past 150 years.
Communists.
And what usually happens is that the lawyer who has been assigned to them doesn't say peep. But when there have been cases in which lawyers have been fighting as Lynn Stewart fights, as Bill Kunstler fought, as lawyers are supposed to fight, and actually defending their clients, and the courts have been confronted publicly with the evidence, it's been hard for them not to release those people, because the obligation of any court of law when the basic rights of a defendant are violated is to release them from custody and to throw the case out. This is the formal protection, and invoked more in the exception than in the rule, I fully acknowledge. One point I would like to make about this with respect to this show trial that we're going to have presented to us in New York, and with respect to the torture of the unidentified many in Guantanamo. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was assassinated in 2002. It was made a huge proclamation by George Bush on the first anniversary of 9/11, when the United States government was looking for a political justification for expanding its repressive measures. They staged the following raid in Karachi on September 11, 2002. It was witnessed by all members of the press in Pakistan, notably by the correspondent for the Asia Times. It was witnessed by a host of neighbors and attending people. There were hundreds of soldiers and police there. There were special operations forces there. The Federal Bureau of Investigation was there with a special operating force. They stormed the building. They found Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and some colleagues in an upstairs room, and the special forces of the Pakistani army with FBI present opened fire and gunned down Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. The press described it minutely. As he was dying, wrote a verse from the Quran in his own blood, and it was reported at the time and confirmed by witnesses and never contradicted in the Pakistani press. A woman, FBI officer, said to the special forces of the Pakistani army, we wanted to take him alive. You have just killed Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And as it was described in the Asia Times, she went over and severed the finger of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed for the DNA confirmation, which was then presented. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was murdered in 2002. 6 months later, Ralph, a dog and pony show of the kind that we're going to have in New York took place in Rawalpindi, the political capital and border city to Islamabad, the formal capital. The home of a distinguished professor of biology in Pakistan, whose wife was a leader of an Islamic political party that was opposed to then-dictator Musharraf, President Pervez Musharraf. The home was suddenly raided by Pakistani forces. There was nobody in that house but the 42-year-old retarded son, Abdul Qaddus, of the professor and of his wife, who was the leader of the Islamic party. Abdul Qaddus was arrested, and the authorities announced they had captured Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. The Pakistani press exploded in an expose. What is this staged operation of Musharraf, said the Pakistani press. Everybody knows Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was killed 6 months ago. So here you have this crude charade. This Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who they have presented to us, Ralph, in this current confession, concerning all the 31 separate plots to which this man has confessed, everything including the assassination of Julius Caesar, this Khalid Sheikh Mohammed they have in custody speaks pidgin English. I no want killed a Jew. I didn't, da, da, da. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, brothers and sisters, is a man, he is of Baluchi national origin, or was, I should say, in the Baluch province of Pakistan. He was born in Kuwait. He was fluent in Urdu, in Arabic, and in English. He was a graduate engineer from a college in North Carolina. He received 2 degrees, as a matter of fact, and has been widely noted for his command of the English language. This government charade is exactly what we have seen with respect to the framing of Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman. It is exactly what we have seen with respect to the government operation to bomb the World Trade Center in 1993. It is exactly what we have seen with respect to the so-called landmarks plot for which the blind Egyptian cleric was framed. It is exactly why Lynn Stewart has been targeted by the authorities, because she is the advocate. She is the vehicle for exposing the crimes of the United States authorities. That's why they have targeted her. That's why they've incorporated Lynn within the charges of terrorism, the false charges of terrorism that the United States government has imposed on supposed demonic others, the very crimes of which the authorities themselves are the authors.
Let me add this, that we hope that everybody's grandmother has told them, tell the truth, because you only have to tell the same story. And we find the American government in position of telling lie after lie after lie, and we hope that this will begin to open up people's eyes, that the government is not what they pretend to be, because they have to change the story over and over and over again. If people can just get their minds around that fact, that the government continues to change their story, you have to wake up and say, something's wrong with the government, or something's wrong with me, that I accept these ruses, these perfidious prosecutions over and over and over again as being something real. That they fear the so-called terrorists, and I hesitate to use that word, because one man's terrorist is another man's patriot, and I say every person has the right of self-defense, every government has the right of self-determination, and any government that opposes that is the terrorist government. So let us remember that in this perfidious prosecution, the so-called terrorists, they mean to terrorize us And if you don't notice your paycheck, if you don't notice your shrinking dollar, if you don't notice the injustices in this home subprime loan, if you don't notice the movement of money from the bottom to the up to upward, then maybe we have to stop looking at the government and start looking at ourselves and start doing something to stop and reverse these trends.
Thank you, Ralph. That says it all, brothers and sisters. Stand by Lynn Stewart. Be part of the struggle. This is not a spectator sport, brothers and sisters. Once again, we want a constant letter-writing campaign. We want this prison flooded with thousands of letters daily to Lynn Stewart.
MCC, Manhattan Correctional Center, 150 Park Row, New York, New York, 10007. And Ralph, would you repeat her number?
Yes, Lynn Stewart.
No longer Lynn Stewart. She is a number now.
53504-054. Lynn Stewart, 53504-054, MCC, New York, 150 Park Row, New York, New York, 10007. Thanks so much, Ralph. You're an inspiration. You're part of the struggle. You're a leader of the struggle. It's been a great privilege to have you on Taking Aim.
Thank you so much, Ralph, and get well quick, Maya.
Thank you, Ralph. Bye, brothers and sisters. We'll be with you next week.